we're live.
Hello and welcome back to another This Isn't Sodom episode of the First Time Watchers podcast.
Because we like to watch.
My name is Tim Costa.
I'm Armando De Silva.
This is Walter Vinci.
What we like to do on the FTW podcast is find a movie that none of us have seen, watch it together, and then discuss. These movies could be new, they could be old, or something that is on all of our lists of shame. And if you'd like to send feedback, remember to email us at firsttimewatchers@gmail.com and stay tuned to the end of this episode for other ways to contact us and to find out what we'll be discussing next week. Speaking of feedback,
yes,
we actually have some thoughts on our Iron Man 3 review from a few weeks ago.
Let's stoke them up.
Mike Close wrote in and he said the following. Hermano Wally, you changed my mind about Iron Man 3 because I agreed with everything you said. Where was S.H.I.E.L.D.? How did Tony get money while he was stranded in Tennessee? The vanilla villain? Sure. I got that and I dig it too. You even made me realize that the Mandarin reveal was just a joke. I was signed up to see an Iron Man versus Voldemort type action sequence. I agree it turns into a buddy cop movie. I think you're right on. However, now I think he's interjecting sarcasm. I couldn't really tell the tone in this next paragraph.
Okay.
Hermano, Wally, you both seem really astonished that you just watch a Disney movie for kids. You were comparing this film to Christopher Nolan movies. That's great. Thank you for not comparing this movie to the other movies that have come from Marvel. He writes, in quotation marks, sigh. That C-plus average should be revisited. He continues to write, Christopher Nolan's Batman existed in a world where there is little to no suspension of disbelief. I think that's why it was popular. The Marvel franchise comes with a lot of suspension of disbelief. Physics do not work in the Marvel universe, and yet it didn't seem like any of you had a problem with that. These stories are more like fairy tales. This was a Disney comic book movie for kids. You wanted more PTSD? You wanted to know how Tony had a budget in Tennessee? You want Pepper to die at the end? I think you were signed up for a different movie. It delivered exactly what was to be expected, by the book, by design. They don't take chances like Warner Brothers does with the comic book properties. I never expected they would. Did you? I can't wait to see this movie again. Thanks, Mike. So, thoughts?
Alright, Mike. Good, Romano.
Well, I'm going to go off. I'm going to tell him, go back and watch every single trailer leading up to this movie. What was presented to us, we did not get. It's like ordering something on a menu, and they like ordering a hamburger, and they bring you a hot dog. It's not the same. The movie was set up as a darker story. Watch every single trailer that led up to the release of the movie. And there's a lot of stupid shit in the movie that I'm not going to like you were complaining that on the Oz and Great and Powerful review. Oh, you can't just blanket statement and say it's made for kids because blah, 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 blah. That's the epitome of fantasy movie, and you were giving me shit for calling it a kids movie. Now I'm giving shit because I'm saying that things that happen in this movie are beyond our strained believability. Like, no, like, you can't just blanket statement and say, like, hey, this is a Disney movie, it's for kids. There's a lot of stupid shit in this movie. Like Tony and the Iron Patriot guy questioning the Mandarin? Why the fuck would the Mandarin know anything about the real plan? Like, that whole scene is stupid as fuck. That entire scene is dumb as hell. This guy is a paid actor. Then why the hell would he have any information about what the hell is really going on?
No, I pretty much agree with everything Romano said. All the trailers showed me one movie, and then I was given another movie. If I go back and look at all the other, you know, Avengers movies, you know, Thor looked like what I got out of it. Iron Man 2? I saw Mickey Rourke running around with laser whips. All right, that's cool. And, you know, Tony Stark pulling the suitcase Iron Man armor out, which I was like, all right, the Silver Centurion's there. Again, I got what I walked in on. And then you show me these trailers, which shows, like, oh, this is going to be like a menace. This dude could be an actual menace. In fact, I didn't even expect Tony Stark to even find the Mandarin. I thought it was going to be, like, maybe, like, this, like, kind of behind-the-screen guy. Like, he gets to, like, where the Mandarin's base is. And the Mandarin's like on a TV screen. Is like, not today, Iron Man. And then, you know, lose the fight another day. I'm like, that would have been awesome. But no, you give me Trevor. No, no. I think you need to rewatch the trailers, and that will certainly.
I think he forgets what the trailers were delivering, because I mean, I would be extremely upset if the Batman movies delivered something very similar, like a straightforward, realistic, gritty movie. And then it turned into, like, some kind of
Adam West.
Yeah, all of a sudden it was Adam West and Burt Ward doing fucking 70s Batman or whatever.
Like, running with a giant bomb over his head. Oh, some days you just can't get rid of a bomb.
Yeah, like...
Some days you just can't get rid of a bomb.
I don't know, just... I think we're completely valid in our arguments for Iron Man 3. I don't think that I'm completely out of line with expecting the movie that was shown to me over and over and over again. I saw three different trailers for this movie, and all three of them did not lead me to believe that this was going to be a freaking sitcom, pretty much. I mean, and yes, you could say it's because they're hiding that big reveal or whatever. I mean, like, that, I don't think that's justifiable at all.
See, I think they did really some sort of different thing with, like, maybe some voiceover work in the trailers where... Because, like, even, like, the part, the president even is, like, has, like, a voiceover part in one of the trailers, like, you elected me on, like, one... one platform. That never comes into play at all during the entire movie.
Well, sure it does. When he's telling the Iron Patriot where to go, you know, to whatever his missions are.
Yeah, but then, like, that doesn't... Well, that line cut with the footage that you see doesn't really... It almost looks like the Mandarin's in the back pocket, like, the presence in the back pocket of the Mandarin. It skews how the movie's supposed to be received. If you'd give me more Disney-esque, like, kiss-kiss, clang-clang stuff, then...
Clang-clang?
Yeah, you like that. Then I probably would have been more on board with this movie. Because I loved Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. That movie was awesome. It's in my collection. And I was expecting, I was hoping to go as the Mandarin for Halloween. I'm not even going to bother.
In this episode, we'll be talking about the 2008 Italian crime drama, Gomorra. But before we get into that, it's time for a yay or nay. This is the part of the show where we discuss what we have seen recently on our own. Hermano.
Alright, I watched three movies. First one I watched was one that I actually wanted to see back when I first saw the trailer for it. Man, I'm glad I waited. Chernobyl Diaries.
Oh my god.
So, I'll read the IMDb synopsis. Six tourists hire an extreme tour guide who takes them to the abandoned city Pripyat, the former home of the workers of the Chernobyl nuclear reactor. I thought the setup was pretty good.
Was the reveal that Bruce Willis and his son were there?
No.
Oh.
I don't know that reference because I haven't seen the recent Die Hard. I imagine that's where it's from. But basically, these kids are out on their vacation again, like Europe. And basically, they meet up with one of the characters' brother who's living in, like, somewhere in, like, Russia, I think. And that brother convinces those guys to try to do something outside the norm that tourists would do, like, just visit all these landmarks. Instead of doing that, he convinces them to go on this, I guess it's called extreme tourism. Yep. And basically I'd never heard of it, but the premise sounded cool at first. I was like, all right, a nice setup, I guess, for the movie, like, giving them a good reason to go visit this town. But once they get there, it just turns into, like, the dumbest movie ever. Like, people's motivations for why they do what they do is completely stupid. Like, no one in their right mind would ever do anything that any of these characters do in the movie. I don't think it has any genuine, like, suspenseful moments. It's not scary in the least. Everything that was shown in the trailer is pretty much the best scene in the movie, so I felt like I'd already seen everything the movie had to offer. Definite nay.
At least it's only 86 minutes long.
True. It actually felt longer than that. I don't know.
Movies that aren't that good typically do, even if they are short.
Yeah, and the whole ending, they try to... I feel like they just threw the entire script away towards the end and just kind of tried to wrap it up in a really dumb, like, kind of twisty way, but it's so against what the movie had set up that it just comes off as really stupid. So that's
the director. It's interesting. It's his only directorial job, and he's worked on visual effects in a whole bunch of other movies, including Fight Club.
Oh, by the way, this is from the guy who wrote it is the guy who
Oren Peli.
Oren Peli is the guy that created the Paranormal Activity series. So that's initially what attracted me to want to watch it, but it's terrible. I mean, it's not found footage. It's just a straight, you know, horror movie, and it just kind of... It's pretty terrible.
So is that a yay or a nay, sir?
That's a nay. Absolutely a nay. And then that brought me to another movie that I also had wanted to see during the beginning of the year. And this one, I'm kind of still mixed on. I watched Mama. Came out earlier this year, I think like in January, which didn't give me many signs of hope, but I still, you know, it was being presented by Guillermo del Toro, and it was starring Jessica Chastain and Nicolai Coster-Waldau, who is the Kingslayer on Game of Thrones, for people that watch that show. So going into it, I thought the trailers looked pretty interesting, and I knew that it was based on like a short film that was being expanded to cover, you know, a long form film, and I almost see where the short film ended and the rest of the movie began, because I think the opening of the movie is really strong, and right about 5 to 10 minutes into the movie, I was like, wow, this movie can actually be pretty good. And then it got into trying to explain, like, actually, it doesn't actually ever explain the mythology behind Mama. It kind of goes into it, like, but, you know, like in movies where, like, a character is, like, the antagonist and they're given a backstory and maybe you find out, like, they were a witch or they were Satan worshippers or something like that.
Yeah.
Nothing. It's just a woman who was scorned in a way. So it doesn't give you any kind of, like, backstory or mythology to this person. So you kind of, the whole movie I'm wondering, like, how did this woman, how is she doing all these things? Like, how, you know, what gave her her power? Like, it's just kind of weird. And the best thing I'll say about the movie is the kids were actually really good, especially for what they were asked to do. I thought they were strong.
What about my girl, Jessica Chastain?
She was actually not very good. Like, oh. I wouldn't say she was bad, but she's asked to play a character who's kind of like in a punk band. So she looks too pretty and too sweet to ever be in a punk band. So it just looks like someone kind of posing.
Well, I remember somebody saying something like that, too. She have her hair dyed black or something?
Yeah, it's black, and she got like this little short, like, bobby haircut. And
she's this cute little redhead.
Yeah, and she just comes off as too sweet to be in this band, and her whole character is encompassed in the beginning as a person who she takes a pregnancy test, and it comes back negative, so she's like, yes, like, she doesn't want anything to do with kids, so of course these kids are thrust into her life, and then you get the generic, like, I'm gonna grow to like you, you know, over the course of the movie, and it's not really earned, and then there's a doctor character in the movie who's like studying the kids, and because they kind of become feral and are trying to be introduced back into society, and the doctor seemingly figures out how to stop Mama, but then goes out of his way to not bring the item that he needs and goes to investigate what's going on with Mama, and I'm just like, what the fuck is going on right now?
Did you know that this is actually based off of a short film by the same director?
I'm gonna kill you right now.
He said that.
I literally opened with that.
What? What was that?
So, goes to show, Tim does not pay attention when I'm talking.
Huh?
Yes. Anyways, I'll say meh on it. It's not terrible. It's just not anything to rush out for. I maybe put it on the way in the bottom of your Netflix queue. And so that's a meh. And finally, I saw an excellent movie that I'd been wanting to watch for years. Way back in the days when I was still collecting anime. This is a movie that always just kind of fell to the background because I always found something else that I wanted to get instead. But I finally got a chance to see it from 1988, Grave of the Fireflies.
Oh, what'd you think?
I've heard this is devastating.
You will cry your eyes out. Everyone I've seen has bawled. I don't cry at movies, but it's weird watching a movie and being like enthralled in this room and hearing people behind you going, what'd you think?
It was awesome. Fantastic movie. Really, like Wally said, really, really sad movie. It's not very long. It's only an hour and a half. But man, like, talk about just packing, like, so much into an hour and a half. And even as an animated movie, this movie is pretty much an extended first 15 minutes of Up. It's so sad. Like, it's crazy. It pretty much, I'll read the synopsis from IMDb. A tragic film covering a young boy and his little sister struggle to survive in Japan during World War II. Basically, it happens in like the first 5 minutes. The kid's mom dies, And then they're left to kind of be on their own because their father is in the Navy and he's fighting the war. And it's pretty much their struggle to just survive on their own and try to find... At one point, they find, like, an aunt to take them in. But then they... It just kind of goes from there. And it just shows you, like, all the other side of war that you normally don't see in movies, like, where... Typically, war movies will show you, you know, all the action scenes on the battlefield and all that stuff, and it'll show you from the military perspective. And in this case, it's from the perspective of people that are just common folk living in these villages that are getting bombarded by napalm canisters.
Yep.
Like at any given moment, and there's air raids, and everyone has to live in shelters, and there's like a lack of food, and it just shows you just how brutal like war can be to the people that. Are on the forefront of it, you know, like when a country goes to war and the people that are, you know, left behind to just kind of take the brunt of you know, their country going to war, all the way down to, you know, having to ration like pretty much everything. It's an excellent movie. The animation's a little dated. That's the only thing I'll say negative about it, because it is from 1988. I think the same year like Akira came out, and Akira's animation is like revolutionary, where this is like kind of more like standard animation for the time.
Yeah, it's also two very different studios doing.
Yeah, and this is actually I believe this is early Miyazaki.
Yeah, so the
animation. Yeah, yeah. So I highly recommend the movie for people that haven't seen it. It is a tough watch, but I think you won't regret that you've seen it. So
did definitely. You cry?
I did not cry.
Did the lady cry?
She didn't watch it with me, but she certainly would have cried. So that's a yay.
Right. Okay, I have a few films to talk about. First one from 1950, a noir film called Gun Crazy. A well-meaning crackshot husband is pressured by his beautiful marksman wife to go on an interstate robbery spree, where he finds out just how depraved and deadly she is. So this story was inspired by Bonnie and Clyde. And it stars John Dahl. Do you recognize that name? We reviewed a little movie called Rope. And he's the guy that was behind the whole plan.
Oh, right on.
And so I'm first, like, 15 minutes, I'm like, I recognize this guy. What the hell is he from? And sure enough, you know, because he had a lot of the same smirks, but he's a completely different character.
Yeah.
You know, in Rope, he played a very confident, overconfident person. In this one, he's very doubtful throughout the whole film. It starts out with what I thought this movie was going to be, like a gun version of Reefer Madness.
That would have been awesome.
And I thought that I was getting into that. And it was starting out awesome because he starts out, you know, he's a young kid. He's like a 10-year-old or 11-year-old kid. And he gets into trouble with the law with guns, and he's sent away. And the way it's shot, the way it's set up, that's why I thought I was getting into the gun version of Reefer Madness. But he goes to reform school and goes to the army, and he comes back, and the story really takes off from there, where he meets this woman at a circus, not a circus, like a traveling circus. And it's a lot of fun. There's some great, amazing shots in here. It's Are shot
you being punished with that.
What's that?
Is that a pun?
Oh. There are some scenes in here where the camera is in the back of this car, and they're just driving through town, and they're planning on you know, robbing this you know, brokerage firm or whatever, and they're trying to find a spot, and it's an inside shot of at least 5 minutes long, going through the car and waiting for him to come out, and her dealing with a police officer who just walked around the corner, and then the car chase afterwards. It's really well done. This is a strong movie. I definitely recommend it. It's a lot of fun, a lot of old time noir-y talk. So that's a yay.
What's it called?
Gun Crazy.
Gun Crazy.
A movie that you just mentioned, Wally, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, I revisited. It just happened to be on one of the HBO channels as I flipped onto it, and I decided to stick with it right from the beginning. And I had seen this movie before sometime a year or two ago, and you're right, it's a fun movie. Shane Black, of course, directed it, stars Val Kilmer and Robert Downey Jr., and Michelle Monaghan, is yep. that... yeah, she I have a feeling that she was kind of miscast. I don't think she was the perfect choice for the role. Kind of, obviously it's a neo-noir, so it's sort of the newer take on a femme fatale.
Yeah.
And I don't know if she really pulls that off quite well, quite enough. But it doesn't distract from the movie. It's pretty strong. It's a lot, very fun, and definitely worth your time. So I'll give that a yay as well. Next, from 2011, a little movie starring Bradley Cooper called Limitless. It was just leaving instant queue, so I decided to watch it. Not as bad as you think.
Yeah.
Not a bad... You've seen it?
Yeah. It's one of those movies where I was sitting there going, this movie better not end the way I think it's going to end. Ending of the movie, I was like, I'm sold.
Right.
Totally sold.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Sure. But even throughout the whole movie, you know, I remember seeing the trailers for it. It was dumped in the middle of January or February, something of that year.
It's not half bad.
And it really isn't that bad. It's definitely you could do a lot worse, you know. And, you know, it's about this guy who's given a drug and he discovers that it really taps into the, to everything. In his brain, yeah. It's another movie that shot well with the lighting, you know, in his different moods, you know, when he's on and off the pill. It's a strong movie. It's a good thriller, you know, kind of, you know, based on the way it starts, you actually really don't know how it's going to end, you know? So I would give that a yay, to be honest with you. Next, Madagascar 3, Europe's Most Wanted.
Oh, it's only a matter of time before Madagascar showed up on.
I'm actually a pretty big fan of the first two Madagascars. And this one, if the first two Madagascars had any semblance of reality in those movies, completely abandons any logic whatsoever. But it's fun. It's so much fun. They give you more penguins because you want more penguins. And although not enough lemur, the lemur king, by Sacha Baron Cohen. I wish there was more. However, there was a funny subplot of where he falls in love with a bear, a trained bear who rides a bicycle and then later rides a Ducati motorcycle. That's pretty hilarious. I think I was more entertained by the subplots than I was by the overall story. But the voice talents in here are pretty amazing, other than the ones you know. Frances McDormand and Jessica Chastain and Bryan Cranston and Martin Short. So, I think the kids and the adults would enjoy this one. It's a lot of fun. Yeah.
You coordinate the killing of Osama bin Laden, you get around, let me tell you, Jessica Chastain.
And finally, I'm going to end this on a bad note for myself, and I'm going to disappoint you guys heavily. You guys live in a universe, where you think that Tucker and Dale versus Evil is better than Cabin in the Woods.
Yep.
Yep.
I want to find the next portal out of this universe. There is no way in hell and goddamn nation that this movie is better than Cabin in the Woods. This movie sucks.
What?
This movie was not funny whatsoever.
Oh, dude, you're so...
How? No. This movie is terrible. I laughed maybe once, maybe one and a half times. I don't understand what the big deal for this movie is, because it does nothing. It did nothing for me. When you guys said it was a better deconstruction, or even the fact that it was a deconstruction of the horror genre. No, I didn't find that at all. The most interesting part of this movie is in the last 25% of it, when it really goes off the rails. And that was when I was the most engaged with it. But no. Nope, sorry. This movie.
I don't know. What? I have no idea. Where'd your funny bone go?
Oh, funny bone go? Oh, my God. No. So, Alan Tudyk, okay, fine. You know, it's not really the acting performances that are the problem with this. To me, it's the script and the execution. Nope, sorry. Wrong.
Well, you're wrong, sir.
No, you're wrong.
Agree to disagree.
Yes. So that's a nay for me on Tucker and Dale versus Evil.
Don't listen to him.
All right, now it's time for Trailer Hitches. This is the part of the show that gives us an opportunity to mention a trailer that either gets us on board for an upcoming movie or makes us want to bitch. Walter?
All right, well, I didn't get to see any movies this past week other than the one we were going to watch for the review, but I did get to watch a trailer for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. This looks like it tells the further stories of Agent Coulson, everyone's favorite S.H.I.E.L.D. agent from the Avengers, Thor. So, yeah, I think it's been across every single one of the Marvel movies so far. I don't think there's any movie he doesn't appear
in. I don't think he appeared in the first Iron Man.
No, you're right. He's not in the first Iron Man.
Is he in the Hulk?
Incredible Hulk. That's a good question. Because the
Hulk is outside of this big Marvel reboot.
No, it's not. The Incredible Hulk, the one with Edward Norton, is in this.
Is it? Because I've always been on the same. It's
because
they want to do it again.
Tony Stark shows up at the end.
Yeah.
Really?
And talks to John Hurt.
I have to go back and rewatch that, because I don't remember Tony Stark being that at all. Anyway, I digress. Agent of the S.H.I.E.L.D., it looks like it's going to be a TV serial based on, you know, Coulson's team, Team 7, of S.H.I.E.L.D., and they're tasked with rooting out the superhero problem, it seems, even though that's not quite what S.H.I.E.L.D. does. In the trailer, there's a one of the characters gets zipped up in a black bag, and I'm sitting there again going, that's still not what S.H.I.E.L.D. does. S.H.I.E.L.D.'s kind of like when the Army and the Marines can't deal with the situation, they bring in S.H.I.E.L.D. And they're kind of like a super advanced like team of agents. And this, I'm not quite sure what to make of this trailer.
You know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of what Heroes should have been.
I could get that vibe off of it. I'm gonna have to watch the first couple episodes of this to really get a feel for how the series is gonna play out. Because I mean, some of the characters just don't seem to be like the stuff you see Coulson with as a character, like doing like what she thinks is a remote broadcast. And the door opens up and Coulson's standing on the other side just smiling at her. Like, that's something you'd expect him to do. Because next to Nick Fury, like, Coulson appears to be like a super agent. But I'm curious to see how they're going to explain, and they probably would need to explain it in the first episode, if not maybe subsequent episodes, what happened between Avengers and this new series. I'm thinking LMD. We'll see if that actually comes to pass. Life Model Decoy. We'll see if that gets mentioned in this S.H.I.E.L.D. series. I'm tentatively hitching my trailer to this because I want to see where it's going to go, what it's going to do, and how it's all going to play out. So it's a tentative hitch.
All right, Hermano. All
right, I watched a trailer for a movie called The Hunt, starring Mads Mikkelsen, who people might recognize as the villain in Casino Royale.
As a lot of people are watching now, Hannibal.
Yeah, I haven't seen that yet. So basically the IMDb plotline, a teacher lives a lonely life, all the while struggling over his son's custody. His life slowly gets better as he finds love and receives good news from his son, but his new luck is about to be brutally shattered by an innocent little lie. Basically, the trailer looks like he's a teacher at a school, and I guess one day, for whatever reason, a little girl lies and says that he might have molested her, and the movie, I guess, is going to explore the kind of the birth of a lie and how people will gossip and immediately become fearful and sling hate at someone before they even really know the truth. And it goes to show how, throughout the trailer, it shows how people are perceiving him, and they send him home from his job, and before he's even had like any kind of like court day in court or anything like that. So I think it looks like it's going to be really interesting, like a nice little study of just like what I said previously, like people just judging someone based on what a child has said. And because the act that this person may or may not have committed is so horrific, people automatically jump the gun and deem this guy guilty, you know, before he's had his say, or and just kind of throughout the trailer, no one really wants to even give him the time of day, so he's not even able to like kind of give his side of the story. And it just shows how it kind of, throughout the trailer, like, his life is just coming unraveled and just becoming ruined, so I thought it looked pretty interesting.
It's already been released in a lot of international film festivals. Started out in Cannes in May of 2012, but it looks like it's going to get a limited release here in July of this year.
Yeah, and it's a foreign film, so there are subtitles, but that's never bothered me. And you know, it looks really interesting to me. So,
How did you even come across this? You just randomly click on it?
Just randomly on iTunes trailers.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it looks interesting.
Cool. I will talk about the trailer for the Coen Brothers' next movie that's coming out in December of this year, Inside Llewyn Davis. It stars Carey Mulligan, Justin Timberlake, John Goodman, and Oscar Isaac. Now, geez, Oscar Isaac is the lead in this movie, and I'm looking at IMDb. He's not even in the top three listed here. That's a shame, because Oscar Isaac is a great actor.
IMDb lists by popularity, I believe, of actors.
Really?
So you'd probably see, like, Carey Mulligan up there first.
Oh, jeez.
I believe that's how they do it, so.
Oh, all right. And the trailer, I gotta say, I am a fan of trailers in general, because the art of the trailer, I should say. Because the art of the trailer is a tremendous thing when done correctly.
Yep.
Because it's almost like a movie in itself.
Yep.
A little movie that has to grab your attention for the full movie, you know?
Yep.
And this one plays exactly like a short film. Now, I think I saw the Red Band trailer. And the way it's set up, it, you know, I gotta say, if anybody other than the Coen brothers are directing this, I probably wouldn't have much interest in it, except for if maybe if it had the same actors. But because it looks like a pretty standard guy trying to find himself. You know, he's kind of lost. Maybe it looks like he's on the rocks of his relationship. It looked like maybe Carey Mulligan played his girlfriend or something like that. And he's a musician, you know, trying to find his way. And the way it ends, the trailer ends, is it looks like he's about to do an audition for, I don't know, maybe some group or a school or something like that. And and it's all with, I believe it's Bob Dylan music overlaid. And the way the trailer ends, you know, the instructor or whatever is all alone with him, is asking him, okay, why don't you play this? And he points to a record and it's Inside Llewyn Davis. And he says, okay. And, you know, there's a pause and it looks like he's just about to play cut to the title. And it's edited perfectly. It really grabbed my attention. And and of course, you know, Coen Brothers are, you know, yeah, great movies, and being released in December this year, right during Oscar bait. So, I'm hitching. I'm anxious to see this one. All right, so that does it for Trail Hitches, and now let's get into our discussion of Gamora. The plot. An inside look at Italy's modern-day crime families. The director, Matteo Garrone. The actors, Salvatore Abruzzese, Simone Sacchettino, and Gianfelice Imparato. Walter.
Yo.
Since this film is not structured like most films, I will just ask you, what did you think?
This is one of those films that has grown on me the more time I've put between watching it and, like, talking about it. And I saw it, well, I had to watch it in two parts. I started watching it fairly late at night, well, I was pretty tired, and I got kind of, I watched maybe the first 45 minutes to an hour, and I felt really lost.
And it's long, because it's 2 hours and 17 minutes.
Yeah, it is a long movie. And I felt incredibly lost, and at that point I was like, you know what, rather than try to slog through the rest of this, like, you know, in this, like, kind of like days, I want to be able to kind of really pay attention to what's going on. So I went back and started over. I rolled it back maybe like, you know, 20, 30 minutes, and then picked up from where I last, like, remember, like, clearly. And you know what? I like this movie.
Uh-huh.
The more I think about it, the more I'm like, well, I really gotta, like, this movie is incredibly disturbing, especially toward the, especially that the final scene. I think it takes a lot to disturb me. I was like, "Wow, this is actually a fairly disturbing scene." It's based off a true story, actually. This mob war actually happened back in the early 90s over in Italy. There's a tradition what we know as the mafia over there. These groups are known as the Camorra, Comorra, and they are like independent, like little, like tiny, like independent families that control various things. And their big thing is they try to control as much of the government stuff as they possibly can. So they try to get their hands in the pockets of politicians and whatnot. But since there's no real structured hierarchy, there's a lot of feuding going on. So it can get incredibly violent, like it does in this movie. Where I mean, there's someone goes down, there's retribution, and all these things. And once I was able to focus in on, like, all right, I am, like, you know, I'm actually, you know, sound mind, you know, be wide awake enough to watch this. It isn't structured like normal films at the beginning. It seems to take a more normal structure toward like the midpoint. It follows about three different stories that you see.
Because it just drops you into the middle of the story, pretty much.
Yeah, from the very beginning. Like, opening scene is takes place in a tanning salon. And at first you're like, oh, are we going to follow like these guys going backwards? But then they're never really mentioned again. So it takes a little bit once you get past that initial kind of like, I would say, kind of convoluted beginning, uh-huh, with people dropping names and you're seeing people come and go left, yeah, and right. It becomes a fairly straightforward movie. Like, you see the story of the dressmaker, the story of the two up-and-comers, and the story of the kid. And once you get past that kind of weird beginning, these other stories play out really well. Like, I thought they were really well done. It's almost like an anthology of three people's lives.
Hermano?
Yeah, I liked it as well. I think there's actually five stories in it, and I liked two of them quite a bit. I think the ones Wally didn't mention was there's the story of the tailor, the one delivery boy, the two kids, the guys that are trying to dump illegally.
Oh yeah, I forgot about them.
And then the guy who is some kind of like middle money manager.
Oh yeah, Don Shiro. I forgot about him too.
I really liked the two stories involving the kids. Like Wally said, the movie kind of follows five different plot lines, and they kind of, some of them kind of go into each other. They kind of take place in the same like building or area, and then the other ones you're not really sure. I thought it was pretty strong. Like, the two stories that I really liked, I thought were pretty strong. The other ones, I felt like they didn't really belong in the movie because they didn't seem like the impact was there as much as the ones with the kids and the gangs. Like, the story with the guy's dumping, I was like, why is this story even in the movie? Like, I had... the way that one ends is really weak, and I was just like, you really could have cut, like, easily, like, 20 to 30 minutes out of this movie and dropped that story completely, because it's just...
I think that really shows in how all these families kind of tie in together and how all their actions tie in together. Somehow,
I guess. But and then there was the story of the tailor. I thought there was one of the best scenes in the movie was in that storyline. But overall,
it, with the car,
yeah. Because I felt like something was going to happen because they lingered on that shot for quite a while. Yeah. But that was a pretty strong scene. And overall, though, I that one was just kind of like it's okay. It's nothing. It would have been probably served better as like maybe a short film. And then the one I really did not understand, and I still am racking my brain trying to figure out what the hell was going on in this, the money holder guy.
I can explain what's going on in that one.
All right, let me first explain what I thought was going on at first. At first, I thought he was collecting, like, protection money. And then I was like, well, no, because later on he's giving people money. So I'm like, I have no idea what is going on in this story. I have no idea what his purpose is. It looks like he's carrying money for one of the gangs, but why is he paying people? I had no idea what was going on in that story.
He's an accountant. So basically, when one family needs to deal with another family, they don't deal with each other directly. They're going to use him.
Yeah, he's the middleman.
He's the middleman. That way, they can, if the police ever catch him, they can absolve. They can basically absolve all the any sort of like, oh, we weren't dealing
there's
with
no
this.
Connection.
There's no conspiracy here.
All right, that makes sense, except for the whole interaction with the old man. What, that old man is obviously not
that's
crime
the man,
family.
He is. That's Don Raphael, and Don Chiro works for him.
Yeah, you were able to follow the names a lot more than I was.
And what ends up happening is he's seeing all this insane violence happen around him. Like, he sees like how he's seeing all these like shootings and killings going on, and he knows that right now he's in the middle of a war. He wants to switch sides, and so what he's trying to do is he's trying to buy his way into another family and become their accountant, but they don't take him in the end. That's where he says he's like you have to sell, like, you know, you have to sell your life to me completely, which is when you see that scene where he's counting the money and something happens.
That makes sense, but overall I don't think that it was that clear.
It isn't. It's
well, I don't think any of the really connecting lines or through lines in this movie are very clear, and I think it's purposeful like that in order to give you the sense of kind of. There is some sense of moral ambiguity in this film, you know, and I think that's there to give you that, you know, and also not to make you fully understand why everything, you know, how everything is connected, I should say.
Well, the dumping thing was a huge scandal over in Italy, too. There was crime bosses that were getting money to illegally take chemicals and heavy metals and all this and bury them in quarries. And the people that lived around these quarries are getting incredibly sick right now. And there's actually a 40% increase in cancer in these areas from this kind of activity. And
this movie, I would have benefited greatly from knowing a lot of this back stuff, because if I would have known stuff like that, I mean, going into the movie, it would have made more of an impact with me. But not knowing any of that stuff, the movie really doesn't give you much as far as a history or what's going on or why this dude is doing this.
Yeah, they take the whole impact of that completely out of
the
movie.
Until the epilogue, when it gives you a story of what this is really based off of.
Yeah, during the end credits?
Yes.
Yeah, I didn't even stick around.
Oh, really?
The movie was so long, I was just like, oh, man.
Oh, it gives you a good explanation of what all the relationships with these crime families are. Yeah.
But the kids, the two kids, I think that was probably my favorite story.
Well, it's really great how they start showing them off imitating scenes from Scarface.
Yes.
You know,
and the kid is even wearing the same shirt Tony Montana is wearing.
Yeah.
And just quoting lines from the movie, like, the world is ours and stuff like that. Like, it's nothing new. I've seen it done before where, like, a kid is very impressionable and he sees this character and he's like, wow, I want to be like this. Especially an urban kid, a street kid, would glam onto this and be like, wow, this dude, look at all he came up from nothing, and I could idolize this dude and be like this guy. And it just, their final scene in the movie was probably the one scene I thought was the most tense in the entire movie, because I felt like it could have gone either way. I wasn't sure how that was going to resolve, and even though it resolved the way it did, I felt like, you know what, like, ultimately I think that's the good ending to that scene, because anyone watching this, any kid watching this, it didn't glorify it. It kind of showed you the darker side of
what's going to happen
to you if this is the lifestyle you choose for yourself.
Yeah. You know, I'm kind of on Wally's side where it took me a couple of days to really have this movie sink in.
You watch it and then you let it marinate.
Yeah.
You know, let it sit.
Exactly. You know, early on in our recording days, we would watch movies together and then record right afterwards.
Yeah.
And I think we would have had a lot more difficulty talking about this movie. Or even appreciating this movie fully, you know, instead of the 3 or 4 days that we've had, you know. So, it took a while for it to sink in, and it got stronger as time went by. It really did impact me at the end during the credits to say, oh, this really is happening there.
Yeah.
This really is based on a true story. And that had a... I think that was effective. I think that if they had a prologue stating, you know, giving that kind of same statement as to, like, the following is based on a true story, this is something that happened 10 years ago, you know, then I think it would have been less impactful.
Yeah.
I like the way it was structured. I actually really like the storyline with the tailor, because I didn't fully realize until later when his partner was asking him questions that, oh, he really is doing this behind his back, you know, and this isn't really allowed. This is this is frowned upon what he's doing.
It is.
You know, collaborating with the Chinese.
The competitors. You can't do that.
Right, right. So it's just actually a very realistic movie. Another thing that really struck me of the realism of this movie was the little kid, like the 11 or 12 year old,
who, delivery boy,
who's the delivery boy, and there's a scene where one of his cohorts, if you will, that's on a basketball court gets shot. Yep. And it happens off screen. You only see his reaction, and his reaction is very realistic, because he isn't that braggadocio wannabe grown up right now kid. He immediately turns into this frightened child, you know, just the way the look in his eyes, and it's done very well. Another thing that is handled very well in this movie is the cinematography.
Yes.
It reminded me a lot of kind of a mix between Terrence Malick and Darren Aronofsky.
Yep.
There's a lot of close-up shots. And there's not much editing at all. There's a lot of longer takes. If there's any editing in one scene, it's only once per scene, you know, before they go on to the next scene. So the way this film is shot is beautiful, because it gives you that intimate close-up, you know, right up to see these people's reactions. And also, you know, there's a lot of over-the-shoulder shots where you kind of see a side of the main character's face and then whatever they're looking at, you know, especially when that tailor is first at the Chinese shop and he's starting to instruct all these people, and you can see his look on his face, like, oh, he's worried, but he's also somewhat confident that this might work out. And then you see all these faces just looking up at him, you know, like he's at a classroom, you know, and it's just, it's really, really well done.
I think for me at least, it suffered from that problem that I think we've already discussed on like anthology type films or films that just basically depict like five different plot lines or storylines. Is that there was always going to be some that are stronger than the others. And for me, it was the two with the kids. And then if I had to put them in order, I'd say maybe the tailor, the money guy, and then the dumping one. The dumping one, I really was just like, this really does nothing for me. I mean, I think where you said it was structured well, where they only give you the facts based on the true story at the end, I think it could have, for me at least, it could have enhanced it a little bit if they had just maybe put a paragraph on screen and said, this is based on a true story, this is actually going on, and then depict the events.
Yeah, well, maybe that's because it is an Italian film, it was released in Italy, and maybe the filmgoers going into this already know.
Already know.
Yeah.
But it's like more common news over there than it is,
yeah,
is over here. But as a little side bit of trivia about the Taylor story, that actually involved Angelina Jolie. And she was found wearing a counterfeit dress at one of the award shows. But the Academy would not release the footage of that particular dress with Angelina Jolie in it, so they switched it and made it look like the same. They took the dress that Scarlett Johansson was wearing and made that the one that the tailor was working on.
Interesting. Oh, that's right. Okay, yeah. Interesting. Yeah, piece of trivia. Roberto Saviano got death threats from the Camorra for exposing their activities in the novel and the movie, and is now permanently under police protection.
Yeah.
Something else.
Is that the director of the film?
No, I think it's the
writer of the story. The
writer. Oh, okay.
It's basically like they just took his book and then like made some small adjustments to make it into the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I also there was one other element of the story that I didn't quite understand is when all the activities that surround the apartment building, I guess, or the apartment complex that a lot of the characters live in. There's a point where, like, the young delivery boy kid, like, his friend, at one point they're on the same side, but then it seemingly looks like his family is forced to move out.
Yes, because of the war.
I didn't quite get why some people were asked to leave.
Because in this period of time, there's the Camorra and there's the Separatists. And the Separatists and the Camorra are at war now, still. And if you were basically, like, if you wanted out, It was get the fuck out, like, go. And that's when they have that little conversation. He's like, I'm on another side now. I can't be your friend anymore. We're enemies.
Yeah.
And because his father became a separatist and is leaving the Camorra ring.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's why, like, the last thing you see, they kiss each other goodbye, and that's that.
Yeah. I think some of this stuff was really hard to follow. I mean, it's one of those movies that maybe was so true to the book that, or so true to the real life story that only people that actually are familiar with it or read the book would really get a lot more out of this film. Whereas me coming from somewhere, I knew nothing about this movie except that it was recommended to me on Netflix constantly. Like last year, I believe, and I would see the poster all the time. And as soon as I think it was both you guys recommended we watch this movie, I knew exactly which movie you guys were talking about because it was like I felt like it was ingrained in my brain because I'd seen it so many times. Netflix constantly recommending this movie.
Yeah,
to me,
same here.
Based on my other movies that I watched, which I guess I do watch a lot of gritty movies and gangster movies and stuff like that, and horror movies. So of course this movie would be recommended, but. That scene we just talked about where the two kids are talking to each other and they're talking almost like grown-ups.
Yeah.
I loved that scene, man. That scene was one of my favorite scenes in the entire movie because it looked like they were having a grown-up conversation. Like, hey, you're going to the other side. Yeah. Next time we meet, we're going to be enemies.
Yeah.
Even though, you know, we're friends. And they even hug it out.
It's very matter of fact.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, they're talking about it like it's no big deal. Like, hey, if I see you again, I'm not gonna treat you like I'm treating you now. Like we're gonna be enemies.
Yeah, Steven says, like,
I may fire on you.
Exactly. He's like, why can't we be friends? He's like, we're not friends anymore. As of today, that we're on opposite sides, and that's the way it's got to be.
Yeah. And I love that. The only thing I thought was a little strange was how that one ended. Where, unlike the other one with the two kids, where that one's a more of a cautionary tale. That one, the one with the delivery boy, ends almost kind of like a. I don't know, just kind of a messed up ending because you don't feel like the kid actually learned anything or learned a lesson. You feel like he's spiraling further down this rabbit hole
because he knocks on that woman's door and walks away.
He sets her up pretty much. So I'm like, okay. So, I mean, I give him a little bit of leeway because, I mean, the seed... preceding that scene, he's almost bullied into making a rash decision.
Yeah.
And he is, you know, a young kid. He's like 10 or 11 years old or something like that. So I give him a little leeway, but I just felt like I'm not sure what the message there was.
Well, I mean, I think it's, like you had mentioned before, I think it's juxtaposed with the other two kids, their fate. And I think it's just a very realistic take. You know, stuff like that happens. You know, kids take certain paths, and whatever path they choose, you know, they're just showing a very realistic take on it.
Yeah, like, I agree.
And like, I mean, as much as I was disturbed by the ending scene with the two young adults, I guess, because they're not really teenagers,
right?
They were warned several times over the course of the movie.
Yeah,
and you know what I mean. Like, and if you know, the scene where they get dragged out of the strip club wasn't up to scare the shit out of them. You know what I mean? And when you're at that age, though, you're pretty much like, oh, I'm screw you. I'm gonna still do what I want.
But how amazing is that scene where everything before, excuse me, everything before that, there are these brash, cocky kids.
Yep.
And then when they're dragged out of the shit, they are screaming like girls.
Crying like kids.
Reminded me exactly of Kurt Russell at Death Proof.
I thought that was definitely my favorite storyline of all. It's just two, like, you know, they were like in their either late teens or early 20s kids who feel like they're invincible, they're in their prime, and you know
they're smarter than everybody else.
They look at authority and they just scoff at it, and you know their whole story with how they just kind of follow these real life adult gangsters and just kind of fuck with them throughout the entire storyline, like, you know, like just kind of, you know, they're warned at one point, like, hey, don't fuck around, we see you guys skulking around and just being like irritating, just leave us alone, you've been warned. The guy even threatens, like, I'll shoot you in the head next time you do something.
Yeah, exactly.
And they're even given a second chance, and you know they end up, one of the other scenes I really liked was the scene where they actually steal like a cache of guns. And they just go out and just start just shooting into a field and shooting at like this boat. And I'm like, what the hell?
That's a scene that reminded me most of a Terrence Malick film because of the way it was shot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is like, to me, it's like a crime drama version of a Terrence Malick film. because it's a slice of life, essentially. Yep. It dumps you right in the middle. It doesn't really give you an explanation in the beginning. And it gives you these kind of emotional through lines, these story arcs that are very I don't know, just these storylines that are very...
This is what it's like living here during this period of time when there's wars going on. This is what life is like.
Yeah.
I mean, that ends up being part of the Delivery Boy storyline, where you have the Kimura and the Separatists, and one of them is asked to move, Maria, and she doesn't move, and look where that gets her. You know what I mean? And when I saw the trailer for this, a while ago on another DVD that I own, and I can't remember what movie I saw the trailer on. That scene is in the trailer, and that I was like, that's scary as fuck.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, I need to see this movie.
Yeah.
That's why when it came up as a possibility for us to see, I'm like, I'm nominating this one because I've been wanting. If they don't want to see it, I'm gonna have to see this movie anyway.
Yeah,
because now it's available on Instant.
Yeah.
The other thing I just want to say is like pretty great performances all around. Yeah. Like even though I didn't enjoy some of the storylines as much as others, like I felt like there wasn't really like anybody in the movie that I would just usually point at and be like, that guy was really bad, or that, you know, they didn't really fit in the story or something. Like, I really felt like all the stories seemed really believable.
Yeah.
It's just that some were more interesting than others. I don't know. Like, I almost feel like I wish they were full-length versions of those two stories that I really did like, and they left out the other stuff. Like, the other stuff just wasn't as interesting to me. Like, the one with the tailor was the other one that I sort of liked, but I felt like it was as simple as like a guy just needing to make a little more money for his family, and he decides to help out the Chinese counterfeiters learn how to design these dresses.
Well, that's why I think I like that one the most, because the stakes were so high, because he is a family man just trying to get by, you know, as opposed to these kids, these punk kids, or this younger kid who doesn't really know his way. And also I really like the storyline of the money guy, you know, because his stakes were, he's just trying to survive in the middle of this chaos, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's just trying to navigate, he's navigating a minefield, essentially, you know, a very tight minefield. So, yeah,
and he's pretty much despised by both the people that, I mean, he's despised by obviously the enemy side. He's despised by everyone that lives in that complex that he constantly has to visit. I mean, no one really treats him with respect. And you see him sometimes, like, he's just kind of like hiding in alleys and just kind of trying to move when no one's around. And ultimately, though, I like, until Wally just kind of explained to me like what was going on with him, I thought I had him figured out in the beginning. I thought he was maybe paying people hush money, or people were paying him protection money. And ultimately, where it ended, I was just like, I have no idea what just happened, like, with this guy. I don't know what he was doing at the end of the day. And just the way his story ends, I was like, okay, now, that's it? Now what? Like, I just felt like it just kind of ended in the middle of his story. I felt like there should have been a little more maybe to help me further along, I guess.
I mean, I don't think there's a reason to get into the spoilers, because
there's not really much to spoil.
Yeah, we've already talked around it a little bit. You know?
I mean, yeah, the only thing we really could spoil is like character fates, but
yeah.
I mean, why?
I don't think it's necessary.
No, not necessary.
Was there anything else to mention before we get into grades?
No,
I mean, you definitely recommend this movie to people.
Oh yeah, but it's not gonna be for everybody,
right?
You know, it's not. There's a reason why it wasn't released. You know. Wide release or anything, that's very limited release. I'm sure when it came out, this movie came out, 2008?
Yeah.
And, but if you're into like the true crime or, you know, mob movies.
Yeah. But it's not a typical, it's definitely not,
it's not like,
oh, that was interesting. The opening, it said, Martin Scorsese presents.
Yeah.
Did you notice that?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm like, oh, am I going to get that kind of film? No. it's not a Martin Scorsese type film. It's just a more naturalistic take. And that's what I keep referring back to Malick, just because of the way it was shot and structured. That's why I got that feel. But, it's a naturalistic, take on the crime film, I think.
I mean, it's pretty much a true crime story, true crime story, because all the stories that are depicted in this movie actually happened in one way or another in real life. So if you're into like that kind of like true crime, historical narrative. Even I'll even go say it's like mob. Even though it's not like a mob movie, like what you're expecting, it's not like Goodfellas or The Godfather. No, this is like what it's actually like a pretty good hard look at like what it's more or less like.
Yeah, you're not going to get these huge explosive action scenes.
Yeah,
it's also a much smaller movie than The Godfather, which deals with like a huge crime family. Where this one, I imagine they're pretty big, but the movie seems very small because everything's very contained. They seem like in one general area, and definitely don't go into it expecting something as good as Goodfellas or The Godfather, but I'd say if you look, like Wally said, if you're into like a kind of like a mob movies or just smaller crime movies and almost like structured like an anthology, you could definitely check it out.
I will say this, I was watching it with one of our listeners, and we both love this one particular scene that happens fairly early on, where there's a birthday party going on, and the camera pulls back, and you see all this, like, these cement buildings with, like, you know, kind of, you know, with, like, rust kind of dripping down them. And in the middle of it, there's a playground. Like, somebody has enough money and has enough connections in this entire apartment complex that these kids are running around on grass, and they're playing outside. And then you see, as you look around some more, there's armed guards on the roof and, like, on opposite balconies. That's pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of great scenes in here. You know, some shots that really do a lot of good setup without explaining anything. It's just through the visuals.
Yeah.
Grades?
I'll give it an A minus.
B plus.
I give it a B, so that's a B plus average.
I liked it more than you did.
Yeah.
You seem like you liked it a lot more than I did.
Well, I mean, like I said, I don't think it's as accessible as those other movies that we mentioned that we're trying to compare it to.
I think I got it down on my grade to a B then. I can't like it more than you. I only really liked two of the stories. You liked all of them.
I don't think you have to base it off of what... I mean, it's how you feel.
B.
Wow.
So I think that's a B and an A minus is still a B plus average.
Still a B plus average.
There you go.
Okay, that does it for this episode of the First Time Watchers podcast. You can find us on Facebook by searching First Time Watchers. We post movie news and updates that we think you would be interested in. And you can email us at firsttimewatchers@gmail.com.
You can also follow us on Twitter at 1sttimewatchers@twitter.com.
And you can follow us on our Tumblr page, firsttimewatchers.tumblr.com.
And please download our episodes on iTunes and feel free to leave a review. Any feedback is greatly appreciated. If you have any suggestions of movies for us to watch, please send a tweet, an email, or post on our Facebook page. And stay tuned for our next episode. We don't know what we'll be discussing, but it will probably be very interesting.
It's the First Time Watchers podcast because we like to watch. All right, let's see how we sound.
How are we sounding? This is really boring so far.
So far, we sound good.
You look a little beat up, Wally. A little tired?
I'm alright.
Yeah?
I look beat up.
Just a little,
I feel beat up.
A little frazzled. No?
Nothing? That's just my hair. It's all the humidity.
Gotcha. We were hoping that you were wearing a similar shirt as us today.
Oh, you know what? I should go home and change. That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
Of course, that does, you know, our listeners all that, you know, that good. Like, can you hear plaid?
Can you hear plaid? Well, fortunately, ours isn't that loud anyways.
Oh, no, see, I would have to come up with something that's kind of like in the middle. Like, you have, like, that pattern that's, like, a really tight pattern. Mine's got, like, a wider pattern. I have to have something that's, like, diagonal.
Yeah, but and I have long sleeves that are rolled up. He has short sleeves.
So I would need something like a hoodie.
A plaid hoodie? That's one ugly hoodie.
You know, I just have to go, like, to Savers. I could probably find one from, like, the 90s when they were, like...
That's true.
Skids. Cross colors.
Nice.
Yeah, as well. But maybe that's better for the show next week. I'll wear little skids and cross colors if I can find some. Just bring it back. Bring it back to the 90s.